National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The ongoing controversy over the decision by Chicago Cardinal Blaise Cupich to grant a Lifetime Achievement Award to Senator Dick Durbin, a longtime supporter of abortion, came to an abrupt end this week, only hours after Pope Leo XIV spoke out about the issue. What did the Pope say, and where do we go from here? And then, SCOTUS began its new term and is poised to hear some very important cases. We talked to Andrea Picciotti-Bear, legal analyst for EWTN News, Register contributor, and director of the Conscience Project. The question at hand is, should a Catholic public official who has a long history in support of abortion, gender ideology, and other issues contrary to church teachings, be granted a Lifetime Achievement Award for his work on immigration? That's a question that surrounded Cardinal Blaise Cupich's decision to grant an honor to Illinois Senator Dick Durbin. Eight sitting U.S. bishops spoke out in opposition, but the matter ended abruptly when Durbin withdrew from the award ceremony. What happened and what happens next? We're going to be joined by Jonathan Liedl, Register Senior Editor. In the meantime, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. And I'm joined remotely this week by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. How are you, Shannon?
I'm very well, Matthew. Thank you.
Well, there's certainly no end to Catholic news, in particular on this particular topic. And let's jump right in to Jonathan Liedl, who has been reporting on this story. Jonathan, welcome.
Great to be with you both.
Well, obviously, the news of the last few weeks has been about the controversial decision to grant a Lifetime Achievement Award to Senator Dick Durbin. Provide a little bit of context as to what this was about and how somehow Pope Leo XIV became involved.
Yeah, well, the controversy, as you say, Matthew, it's been brewing for 2 weeks. So we go back to around September 19th when Bishop Thomas Papraki, Bishop of Springfield, Illinois, spoke out against Cardinal Cupich's plan to give this award to Senator Durbin. And Bishop Papraki, of course, very familiar with Senator Durbin, a resident of Springfield, where he had been forbidden to receive communion since 2004 because of his promotion for abortion. That, you know, Bishop Papraki speaking out then resulted in, I think what we would say, a pretty significant and even unprecedented number of bishops publicly criticizing one of their own, criticizing Cardinal Cupich and his decision to offer this award. It totaled eight diocesan ordinaries, the bishops who are in charge of a diocese currently, one retired archbishop, and then also a bishop who is an American but currently isn't in charge of a diocese. So 10 bishops in total, a lot of outcry, a lot of question of, you know, what's going to happen from here. And so this isn't something that, you know, was even just, you know, covered by the Register, covered by EWTN. All of Catholic media was focusing on this, was watching this controversy unfold. And not just Catholic media. We had secular press in the U.S., including the Associated Press, you know, jumping in as well and covering the controversy. So a big deal. So how did Pope Leo get involved? That's a good question. Did he... how did he get involved? Well, Pope Leo, he, as we know now, he likes to go to Castel Gandolfo once a week. This is the Pope's kind of vacation home. We're used to the Pope going there in the summer. But the Pope Leo XIV, likes to take one day away from the Vatican there on Tuesday. And he's made it a practice to take questions from the media when he's arriving at Castel Gandolfo on Monday evening. And so that's what happened in this case. The Pope took a number of different questions from different reporters. And, you know, one of EWTN's own journalists, because of the significance of this issue back home, posed the question to Pope Leo, what would you tell Catholics, right, who are concerned or troubled by this? And what are your own thoughts on the matter? So that's kind of the background that then brought us up to the Pope's response and all the other various events around this.
Yeah, Jonathan, the bigger background, I guess, is as our listeners know, Pope Leo is from Chicago and very acquainted with Senator Dick Durbin and Cardinal Cupich, of course. The second thing is that since his election, really from the moment of his election, he's been talking about unity, peace, brotherhood. And in his recent interview with Crux, he specifically talked about what a priority he's placing on bringing the bishops of the United States together, you know, to work in common on their priorities together. And in the midst of all that, this thing kind of blows up sort of out of nowhere, right? So we should switch, just kind of go to the, not quite the end of the story, but nearly the end of the story, which is what he actually said to the EWTN journalist that day.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if we have a clip of it, but I can read it off if we, yeah, he said, oh, it's interesting. He said he wasn't terribly familiar with the particular case of the controversy over Cardinal Cibich giving Durbin the award. And then he mentioned it's important to look at the overall record, the overall work that the senator has done, you know, noting that he's been, you know, a Senate, well, in Congress, not a Senate for 4 years, but involved in politics for 4 years. So, Shannon, as you pointed out, Pope Leo clearly, I mean, he's from Chicago, so he knows, right, even if he doesn't know all the details of the particular controversy, he knows Senator Durbin, and really Senator Durbin, who represents kind of the demise of the pro-life Democrats. Senator Durbin, initially, when he got involved in politics in the 1980s, was pro-life, right? And that, as he moved higher and higher up, though, he began to discard that commitment to the unborn, you know, for the sake of political expediency. You know, Pope Leo, he acknowledged, he said, I understand the difficulties and tensions, but I think as I myself have spoken in the past, it's important to look at many issues that are related to the teachings of the church. And then here's what he said that I think was really kind of striking for a lot of people, prompted a lot of reactions. He said, someone who says I'm against abortion but is in favor of the death penalty is not really pro-life. Somebody who says I'm against abortion, but I'm in agreement with the inhuman treatment of immigrants in the United States, I don't know if that's pro-life. Then he went on from there and he talked about how complex these issues are. He said he didn't think that, you know, any politician has all the truth on them in terms of kind of really living the church's teaching out fully. But he asked for respect, you know, as Americans and people in Illinois try to tackle, you know, these ethical issues. So, and he closed by saying the church teaching on each one of those issues is very clear. So that's what he said.
Yeah, Jonathan, these that framing, let's put it that way, is very similar to something that he's already said. And in this very brief interview that he gave to EWTN News, he even references the fact that I have talked about this before. What did he mean by that phrase, and why is it important?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, as Pope Leo, he hasn't necessarily been Pope for a long time, but, you know, but before that as well, he's kind of articulated how he approaches these issues. But even as Pope, you know, early on, an audience with the diplomatic corps at the Vatican, like he underscored the need to promote the gospel of life and to protect the vulnerable across the board, underscoring the importance of doing that for the unborn, especially, but also for the elderly, for immigrants. But one thing, Matthew, I know that you and I have talked about that I think is interesting. During when he was a cardinal, he went back to Peru and he spoke at a commencement address at the Catholic University in Chiclayo. And he did give a big talk, you know, on the need for consistency and for Catholics to apply the church's teaching about life and human dignity across the board on every issue. And you're right, Matthew. If you go back and look at that speech, this phrase that he used where he said someone who's against abortion but, you know, is for the death penalty, that's not pro-life. He used the exact same language in that speech from 2023. But why? Another reason why it's important, though, is in that speech from 2023, he also goes on to say, just because there is this need for consistency, we can't treat every moral issue as equivalent, right? Some are weightier than others, and we need to keep that in mind as well. So I think he didn't have time maybe to say that in the context of this, you know, very brief comment in Rome. But that, I think, is part of overall how he looks at these issues and how we can expect him to talk about them going forward.
Yeah, and he kind of gets there right at the end of his comments to EWTN when he said church's teachings on this are very clear.
Yeah, and I have one thing to say about that. I mean, the reaction from this, we could talk about Catholic reaction, but unsurprisingly, the secular media has really like tried to use this to say that the Pope has defended the senator, right? Politico ran a headline saying that. We now have, you know, coverage of Senator Durbin saying he was overwhelmed by the Pope defending him from abortion-related criticisms, which, if Matthew, is exactly as you're saying, if you take everything the Pope said together, including his insistence on the clarity of the church's teaching, and the church has been very clear about abortion, especially being a particularly heinous evil and offense against human dignity, then that's not the takeaway here, is that the Pope is somehow giving cover for Senator Durbin, or at least it shouldn't be the way that we should think of how Pope Leo views these issues. That's my sense, at least.
Right.
I think it's safe to say, asking both of you, that this is maybe the first public relations trouble that Pope Leo's gotten into in the short time he's been Pope. But I wanted to ask Matthew, we spoke about this, you know, in some ways, some might say he said too much. In fact, he starts off by saying, I'm not really familiar, totally familiar with the details of this case. And yet he went on, right? But in other mm-hmm. ways, it the interview ended a little too soon. Matthew, you've talked about how he's really gifted in speaking in a very balanced way. And had this interview gone maybe 30 seconds more, 20 seconds more, maybe he would have tied it together a little bit more. What's your feeling on that?
Yeah, well, and to that point, I think you're raising a very crucial element here, and that is that from the beginning of this pontificate, Pope Leo XIV has talked about, and Jonathan, you touched on it too, that we want to sort of bring down the temperature, to put it colloquially, that there is clearly a high degree of polarization within elements of the church, certainly also, as we have seen in this controversy, among some of the bishops. So if you look at the totality of his comments here, it's very apparent, at least to my eye, that he is talking about that unity. He talks about the fact that we have to come together to discern these, to search for how we can move forward on dealing with each other. And I think that's going to be an important element, I think, from him as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Shannon, you pointed out that he has been almost meticulous in avoiding controversy in the early months of his papacy. And this was the first thing that I think really has created some angst, you know, in different parts of the church. That's clearly, I think, not his intention and perhaps not what we can expect going forward. But, you know, I want to point out our colleague Frank Rocha has pointed out that Pope Francis's availability to the media, although he didn't do this kind of thing that we're seeing Pope Leo do, media scrums, right? But he did interviews frequently, papal press conferences on planes, would perhaps set his predecessor up to feel like they had to do something similar. And the challenge when that happens, Frank writes, is that you have the media of the magisterium of the media, right? Which means, yeah, like, a pope, when you get asked a question in a media scrum like this, you might not have as much time to say as much as you want, or it's the setting isn't the best place to maybe, you know, say everything you want to say. And so the result then is the media, right, interprets the pope and takes him in whatever direction they want to go. So the secular media, unsurprising that they're trying to frame this as like, oh, abortion's not a big deal, like go for it, like. So I think that's a lesson that's perhaps being learned, and I would not be surprised, and I have heard this from other Vatican journalists, not connected with EWTN even, that we'll have to see if Pope Leo wants to continue to make this a part of his outreach going forward as these types
And I know that we'll be there covering it and look forward to your analysis. Jonathan Liedl, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Well, when we come back, the Supreme Court is beginning its new term, poised to hear some important cases. We're joined by Andrea Pacioti-Bear here on Register Radio on EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, your host of Register Radio, joined, as always, by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, in a new commentary for the National Catholic Register, Andrea Picciotti Bear, who's a rather prominent person, in case you didn't know that. She is a legal analyst for EWTN News, Register contributor, and director of the Conscience Project, has a piece in which she talks about the fact that Alito is right. We should all be concerned over worldwide threats to religious liberty. And specifically, she's looking and says that each case in the Supreme Court's fall session involves efforts by government to restrict or compel speech in error or suppress ministries and individuals from acting consistent with religious convictions. So what lies ahead for the Supreme Court? We have an expert on that, and that's Andrea Picciotti Bear. Welcome back to Register Radio.
Thank you, Matthew and Shannon, for having me on.
Well, let's get right to it, because we have Justice Samuel Alito sort of weighing in on the threats to religious liberty. And here he is, fresh from having met Pope Leo XIV in St. Peter's Square, where he was in Rome giving an address to judges and lawyers as part of the Vatican's judicial headquarters in the Jubilee of Justice. What did he have to say, and what's your sort of forecast for the cases that we really need to be paying attention to?
Yeah, no, Matthew, it was really lovely to see. I think I first saw it on X, a picture of Pope Leo and Justice Alito, and it just made me smile. I'm sure your listeners remember that Justice Alito was the primary author of the majority opinion in Dobbs, the case that struck down Roe versus Wade and said that the Constitution didn't create a right to an abortion. And he's been, this isn't something new that he's been flagging for people, the challenges against religious freedom, both here at home and abroad. He specifically mentioned, and I thought it was really lovely, the persecution of believers outside of the U.S. And oftentimes that persecution is violent and ruthless. And it was a very important statement to just on a global stage for an American jurist to turn people's attention and says, you know, basically that Christians, all Christians, should be concerned about attacks against religious freedom and think of ways that they can contribute to combating them. And that's a really wonderful call to each one of us. It's not something that we point and look, who else is going to respond to this? It's for each one of us. And I really do think that Justice Alito takes to heart that in his role, he's supposed to vindicate the Constitution's guarantee of religious freedom as well. So it's a really promising way to kick off this court's term, which begins on Monday. And I think not just Alito, but several of his other colleagues are very, very committed and concerned about these guarantees under the Constitution.
Andrea, so are you, and I just wanted to interject our congratulations. You're going to receive the Religious Freedom Impact Award from the Religious Freedom Institute next month, and this is in recognition of your consistent, effective, and innovative leadership in advancing religious freedom. We're so proud of you.
Well, I'm also really gracious to you and to everyone at the Register, because you've consistently given me a platform to speak, especially to Catholics, about these issues. Oftentimes, we don't know religious freedom matters until it's taken away. And you guys have known that and been committed to that. And for the last several years, to be able to partner with you has just been a true joy for me.
Well, it's mutual. So let's get into some of the cases. As you said, their docket's still being filled up. But what are some of the religious freedom cases that you're going to be paying particular attention to?
Yeah, so you're right, Shannon, that the docket isn't completely full. So there are going to be cases that trickle into the court's consideration throughout the rest of this term. It begins on Monday and ends officially next October. But already I've identified four cases that kind of touch upon religious freedom considerations, three of which don't trigger the free exercise clause, but they involve believers. Christians who are being told that if they want to participate either as licensed therapists or in the jobs that they have, or in sports, all those sorts of things that the government is putting conditions on them, their state, local governments. So maybe we can kind of talk through some of them. The one that is going to be coming up and heard by the court on Tuesday involves a Christian therapist in Colorado, Kaylee Childs, and she is pushing against the state of Colorado's ban on what they call quote unquote conversion therapy. She assists young people who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. She's a Christian counselor, and her clients come to her and they're seeking supports to embrace their biological reality. And she is being told by the state that she can't do that. She's not allowed to counsel in a way that's consistent with her principles as well as her clients' desires. She's saying that this ban is a violation of viewpoint discrimination, a violation of her free speech rights. And I think she's right, and I think the Supreme Court's going to find that she's right as well.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about the state of West Virginia, and forgive me if I'm not pronouncing it right, Haycox versus Little, because I know that, as you note in your analysis, these are very important to anyone who's concerned about women's sports.
Absolutely. Now, these are two cases. One involves West Virginia and one involves Idaho's laws banning the presence of biological males in women's and girls' sports. It's a pretty simple idea, but there have been people who said that no, men that identify as women or boys that identify as girls should be able to compete in female sports. And they've challenged these laws, claiming that they violate Title IX, which is a federal law basically that was advancing the interests of women in sports and in education. They're also claiming that there's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, claiming that there's a special heightened attention and scrutiny that courts should give to these laws because transgenderism is a form of class-based classification on the basis of sex. Now, you may remember that last term in U.S. versus Scarametti, the Supreme Court said, no, this idea of an equal protection violation based on transgender status just doesn't float. But that doesn't mean that people aren't going to keep trying to make it with different arguments, and they're still trying to make it. I think, again, both cases, it's likely that this Supreme Court is going to vindicate the rights of state lawmakers to address fairness issues, but it doesn't mean that the ACLU is going to go down without a very big fight, especially because it seems like they've kind of focused all of their attention on promoting the progressive idea of gender ideology.
Andrea, I know another case is in New Jersey, my home state. I know you have strong feelings about this one. This involves restrictions on pro-life pregnancy centers. What's at issue in that case?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's like, why don't we just let these pregnancy centers be? In New Jersey, the state attorney general decided that he thought there was something nefarious going on at a pregnancy center. And so through what's a subpoena, a request for tons of information from this organization, including that they reveal the identity of their donors to the state. And that subpoena, that really broad-reaching subpoena with no indication of any wrongdoing provided, would just burden, cripple this pregnancy center, almost dedicating. I think they said that they would have to have their entire staff start working completely on complying with the subpoena. So they went to federal court and they said, hey, this is a violation of our civil rights, this kind of thuggery. And because what it's trying to do is close us down using the authority of the state with no justification whatsoever. The issue is only exciting for lawyers, which is whether you can bring a 1983 action if there's a concurrent state action going on. But at the heart of it really is whether a government can kind of use the talent, the strength and the authority that it has to basically suppress and silence pregnancy centers simply because they're giving women alternatives to abortion.
Yeah. Well, a lot of cases for us to keep track of. First, before we end today, renewed congratulations on your award. It's fantastic, completely deserved, and look forward to more awards for you in the future. I also want to highlight a piece that you wrote, From the Little Flower to Opus Dei, October Saints Call Us Into the Deep. It's a commentary on some of the great saints in October. Two that immediately jumped to mind, of course, Teresa of Lisieux and Jose Maria Escrivá. So, Andrea, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Matthew, and thanks for that shout out.
Well, that's it for Register Radio this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much for joining us here on Register Radio, here on EWTN. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please, take care, and God bless.